They're probably in front of their TVs booming, actually, if we're really going to be honest about it.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think they actually should have liked that Obi Toppin pick. I mean, yeah. Seems like that was a great pick for them. But, you know, they probably would have booted anyways, just knowing Nick's fans.
Welcome back, everybody. You know what time it is. It's BCB back on the mic. Aaron Washington, your host. Glad to be with you all this evening. And as we go through this time of just absolute insanity on the NBA block and just looking at all these draft picks, all these trades and free agencies tomorrow, believe it or not, if you guys are listening to this, it's probably already time for free agency. So buckle up your seatbelts and get ready for a wild ride. But to join me here on the podcast, I'm super happy to welcome on Sam Aldridge. I've actually known this guy for quite a while. We go back to playing basketball together in high school. So I'm really glad to have him on the pod. And not only that, he is a new contributor for Business Casual Basketball, my website that I've been running for a little bit. And I'm so glad to have Sam on the team because with all this insanity with the draft and free agency, it's been really hard for me to kind of keep up and throw up new articles and things like that with the podcast running alongside it. So I'm glad that he's on the team and he's able to deliver his expertise in terms of an article that he just posted the other day talking about the draft. So be sure to check that out if you guys haven't already. But Sam, I'm so glad to have you on the pod here, man. And I'm stoked to talk about free agency and in the draft and stuff here because it's getting wild, more wild by the minute, it seems like.
Absolutely. Aaron, it's great to be on here. Great to be writing with you at Business Casual Basketball. Had a blast watching the draft last night. I can't believe it's already here. And, yeah, you know, we got like a month until the regular season. So excited to jump into it with you.
Yeah, same here, man. My thoughts exactly. But with that out of the way, let's dive into the NBA draft from yesterday, Sam. I titled this the most unique draft in history because by all accounts, we've never seen anything like this. The entire draft was basically virtual. Adam Silver was in the studio delivering picks like usual, but all the other players were in their homes, respective homes around the country, taking in the draft on TV with their friends and family. Really cool atmosphere. Really great to see their reactions after they get drafted. But it just wasn't the same. It didn't have that same energy and same vibe going through the draft process. Did you feel some of that, Sam, as well, knowing that these guys are not in studio, in person, everything is just kind of like separated and they're distanced from the action?
Totally. Yeah. A super unique year. You know, it was cool to see some of the kind of in-home setups. I remember kind of enjoying that with the NFL draft earlier this year and seeing kind of, you know, where they were celebrating with their family and friends typically. But yeah it was strange. It was kind of weird that, you know, they weren't up there taking the hat from Adam Silver and shaking his hand and looking out in the crowd. And we didn't hear any of those Knicks fans boos this year. So
not this year.
That was a little different. But it was, I think overall, you know, they did a pretty good job with the broadcast. But yeah, a little weird, a little strange.
Definitely. It's just kind of the nature of the environment this year with everything being kind of virtual and distant. You know, it's definitely a different environment. And, you know, we're not getting the same things we're used to. I mean, you're talking about the Knicks boos, Knicks fans booing and everything. I'm sure they'll be back in full force next year. I mean, they got a year off. You know, rest assured. I mean, they're not going anywhere. They'll still be out there. They're probably in front of their TVs booing, actually, if we're really going to be honest about it.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think they actually should have liked that Obi Toppin pick. I mean, yeah. Seems like that was a great pick for them, but, you know, they probably would have booted anyways, just knowing Knicks fans.
So they're just never content. Unless they're getting KD or Kyrie in free agency or something, they're just like, you know, that's a terrible pick. What are we doing?
Right. Whatever the next pipe dream is. Giannis exactly. Next year, you know, they think they're in for every major free agent. So
for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I'm sure for Knicks fans, they would have loved to go number one or number two, you know, top three. I mean, they really need an infusion of top end talent. Not sure if Obi Toppin is going to be that guy that's going to lead them to a championship or, you know, being relevant again in terms of being a contender or whatever. But, I mean, at least they got somebody that can really help them immediately, somebody that's really ready-made for the NBA. But, you know, while we're talking about top-end talent, you know, let's get into the first segment of this podcast, which is the top three. And this doesn't warrant a whole ton of discussion because we know about these top three players already. We know what they bring to the table and what their strengths and weaknesses are. But just curious, Sam, I have my pick here for the best talent out of those top three guys, Edwards, Wiseman, and Ball. Who was your top prospect going into the draft? Who did you want to see go number one? And then maybe if that was different, who did you think actually had the most upside in this draft class?
Absolutely. Well, I think Edwards was kind of the man here these last couple of weeks to go to Minnesota at number one. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of talent, I mean, it's either him or LaMelo for me is the top pick. But Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what Edwards can do alongside D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns up there in Minnesota. I think, you know, his body type and his game fits really well alongside Russell in that backcourt. For him, you know, it's not really a talent thing. It's kind of a mentality. You know, we saw the reports this week about how much he may or may not love watching basketball kind of in his free time. And, you know, you can kind of make of that what you will. But I think the fact remains that he's a tremendous talent, 6'5", 225 pounds, combo guard who can score inside and out. I think he's going to be a great player for them. And then in terms of, you know, who I think is actually the most talented, it's a big swing, you know, for Charlotte at three, but I think LaMelo Ball may actually have the highest ceiling in this draft. As a 6'7" point guard who can dribble. He's an incredible passer for his size. I think for me, the biggest concern with him is the fit in Charlotte and the kind of ability to play in a system. I know he's been kind of bouncing all over since he was 16 years old and playing in Lithuania and then playing in Australia and, you know, the spotlight that comes with his family. But
definitely
LaMelo Ball is probably my pick for the highest ceiling. You know, if I had to bet, okay, which guy in this draft is going to be a multiple time all-star, I would probably go with LaMelo. But at the same time, the floor might be lower with him too, you know, with his shooting inefficiencies. So, you know, time will tell.
Yeah, it's such a challenging pick between, you know, Edwards and Ball, because you think about their environments they were in college, and not so much for Ball because he played overseas and in, you know, his dad's league, which is a huge failure. And that was just a wild environment for him to kind of grow up in and learn how to play the game the right way. But for both of these guys, it's like they had a lot of bad habits built up, you know, over the years of playing basketball. Some of that, I think, is just because, you know, when you're head and shoulders above the rest of your peers, it's very easy to kind of get into a habit of, you know, just having tunnel vision, maybe in the case of Edwards, or maybe for Ball, just like the shot selection wasn't there. You go back and you look at YouTube, you look at those highlights of him and Chino Hills pulling up from half court. When you're doing that, you just kind of get used to just, you know, having free reign over your game and just doing whatever you want at any given time, even though the situation doesn't really call for it. So things like that definitely provide an element of intrigue, but also risk and just being a little bit concerning for both of these guys. Going to the best talent overall, I was definitely between those two guys. I can see the argument for Ball. His passing, you know, his gift for passing is similar to his brother. It might actually be even better. I mean, both of those guys are elite passers, but I mean, they just have a gift for seeing the floor, which is heightened even more considering their size, being able to see over the defense. I actually went with Edwards, though, as far as like overall talent, top end. I'm just looking at his body, and I was looking at a Ringer piece from earlier today, and it said he actually grew to 6'6 over the hiatus, like the 6 months or whatever. So, I mean, you're thinking about a 6'6 guy with his weight, his strength, his athleticism, which I think his vertical is somewhere around 40 inches or something like that, which is absolutely insane.
Crazy.
It just doesn't really make sense when you think about his build. So we're talking about like a LeBron type guy almost in terms of just size and athleticism. A little bit of a touch of playmaking in there. Maybe it needs to be brought out, you know, in a system that really brings forth some of his skills and helps him, develop. But the same thing, it's his shot making. One of the comparisons here in the Ringer's draft guide was Dion Waiters. You know, for number one, you don't want a Dion Waiters at that spot in the draft. That's just bad news, no matter how you look at it.
Absolutely. Yeah, Dion Waiters, I mean, that would be, you know, a little bit of a disappointment from the number one pick.
Oh,
but
for sure.
Man, the potential's there with Edwards. I totally see what you're saying. And I mean, he can get a bucket on anybody on any night. You know, I remember in Maui, I think he put up something like 34 points in that tournament and just looked every bit the number one pick. Yeah. And then there's other games, you know, where he drifts a little bit and you kind of wonder where he's at. So, you know, it's going to be up to that coaching staff in Minnesota to get the best out of him and try to get things rolling there. And I know they're anxious to make the playoffs. It's been a little while.
Oh, definitely.
So they're hoping for that.
Yeah, one time since 2004, not a great track record. And I'm sure they're just thirsty for some type of success in that franchise. So I see the pick. I see why they went with it. Similar to why Charlotte went with Ball. It's, you know, these two franchises, you're not getting star free agents to join your team. So you really have to aim high when you get a pick like that. You can't just settle for, you know, I'll be top end. Great player, but you need to start at that spot. You have to just kind of take your chances and select the best available talent, which is exactly what those two franchises did. So I do have two other categories here. They don't really pertain to the top three. It's underrated pickup and then also head scratcher. So a pick that maybe we don't quite understand or we're just really doubting as to why that team did that. So since for the top three, it doesn't really apply to that, we can move right along here to the lottery. So the first 14 picks and look at the best talent from that spot. So I'm curious to see who we have from this one, Sam. Looking at who the Cavaliers picked at number five, my guy was Isaac Okoro for this spot, looking at what he brings to the court from both offensive and defensive standpoint. Two-way player, has got great size. You know, he's 6'6", you know, he's about 215. You know, a great upper body strength, so he can definitely kind of toggle between different positions as far as who he's going to guard in a given night. So the two-way upside is there automatically.
Yep.
The shot isn't quite there yet, but he does offer a little bit of self-creation. You know, he's flashed some, you know, a little bit of that when he was in school. So that's something else to keep in mind. So for the Cavaliers, excellent pickup. Just looking at what they need. They need somebody that kind of covers them, you know, in a multitude of areas. I mean, they're pretty good in the backcourt. You know, they picked a guard in the last two drafts. In the front court, and they have a couple of, you know, decent players down there. But as far as a swingman, I mean, that's probably the most important position in the league today. You can make a case for, you know, the forward spots. They do so much for you on the court. So thoughts on Okoro, and then if you had somebody different, curious to who you had in that spot.
Absolutely. Well, just to echo your Okoro pick, I think he's going to be a tremendous player for Cleveland. You mentioned they took Colin Sexton, Darius Garland the last couple drafts. So they've got kind of a smaller offensive-minded backcourt. And Okoro is exactly what they need in terms of a 3-and-D guy, like you said. That's the currency in the league right now. It's grabbing those versatile wings that can defend, can shoot. And I think he's going to be, you know, a much-needed piece for that team as they're trying to build back to be in, you know, a playoff contender in the East. For me, I wrote about this guy. I'm a big fan of Onyeka Okongwu, the big man out of USC. So he went one pick after Okoro, number six, to the Hawks. And I actually think that's a great fit for him, playing in the pick and roll with Trae Young. I think he averaged something like 16 and 8 with 2.5 blocks a game at USC last year. I've told you this. He reminds me a lot of Bam Adebayo with his versatility, I know the Hawks would sign up for that today if they knew he was going to turn into a Bam type of player. But I love Okongwu's game. I think he's going to be a great pickup for them. And he's probably my pick for the best talent in the lottery outside of those top three guys.
That's a great pick, man. And I'm just looking at what the Hawks have on that roster right now. You know, at first it can seem a little bit confusing because you say to yourself, like, well, that front court is set, right? With Collins and Capella there, who they just traded for, didn't play a game for them.
Yep.
So it makes me think, like, okay, maybe the first season he's in a reserve role. Bam did the same thing his first season. You know, he backed up number 21. I don't know if you watched my podcast before, Sam, but that name is taboo in the Heat culture. We don't mention that center that we shipped off to Portland. He's just kind of dumb.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
Good.
Yeah, perfect. For sure.
So he kind of backed him up, you know, his first year. And, you know, he got about, you know, maybe 18 minutes a game. It was the perfect situation for him coming in as a, you know, still fairly raw recruit out of Kentucky. So I kind of see the same thing with, you know, Okwakwu. I'm just completely butchering his name right now. But
Okwakwu, yeah.
There we go. Gotcha. Yeah, perfect. Sure. So, you know, he comes in and he's going to serve a reserve role behind Capella, I'm assuming, for the first season. And then maybe the Hawks do something similar. Maybe next year they find that Capella is not their guy for the long term, so they kind of just ship him out somewhere else. And then Onyeka can just step in behind him, you know, serve a nice role next to John Collins. And he's that enforcer. He's that shot blocker. He's that rebounder. Because John Collins isn't the best interior defender. He's not really going to give you that on a high level. So seem like pretty good compliments there. And I'm selfishly glad they picked him. So now I get the opportunity to see him in action in Atlanta whenever we can kind of go back and see these guys in person again. So super excited about that pick. And yeah, I have no arguments with that one, man. I can definitely see him as being the top talent after those, you know, first three picks that we kind of went through earlier.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited to see him too. And I think, you know, with his versatility on defense. You know, he's 6'9", I think, with a 7'1" wingspan. So he actually has a much greater wingspan than his height would let you know. And I think he's going to be fantastic for them. Exactly what they need playing alongside Collins. So yeah. I think they'll probably let Capella move along here pretty soon. I think he's a good stopgap for now, but the long-term future is definitely Okongwu playing in Atlanta with Trae Young.
Absolutely. You know, I think he's going to be a little more versatile, a little more mobile than a Capella. So he's going to be able to do some things that maybe Capella couldn't quite do on the court, but he can still serve as a great rim roller, you know, and go get the ball for lobs off, you know, from Trae, as you talked about earlier. So great pick. I mean, I don't think there's anything negative we can really say about that one.
For sure.
So we're looking at underrated pickup now for the lottery, and we're looking at who got picked up in that lottery spot that maybe we're not talking about quite as much as we should be. So for guys in that slot, you know, somewhere between like 4 and 14, you know, Sam, you're looking at the draft here. You're looking at, you know, who got picked up, and, you know, we're not giving him enough praise for what he's going to be able to offer to his new team. So like, who stood out to you as far as who occupied that spot for you? Underrated, under the radar, who needs more praise in that kind of lottery slot?
Absolutely. So you mentioned that 4 to 14 range. I'm actually going right to the end of it at number 14. Aaron Naismith, the wing out of Vanderbilt, landing in Boston, which is just a perfect landing spot for Naismith. In case you don't know much about the guy, he played two seasons at Vanderbilt. Last year, averaged 23 points a game, shot 52% from three. I mean, he's an absolute sharpshooter from three.
Jeez.
He's one of those guys you got to start guarding him when he pulls into the parking lot. He's tremendous. And he is, you know, yet another 3-and-D kind of wing that can really shoot it to play in that Brad Stevens offense. I think it's just a perfect fit for him. The only reason why he didn't get picked higher was because of his injury. He suffered a stress fracture in his foot and only played 14 games last year, and it kind of hurt his draft stock a little bit. But for me, he's a clear top 6 or 8 guy out of this draft, and him going at 14 is a great value pick for the Boston Celtics. So Aaron Naismith's my pick for the underrated pickup in the lottery.
Dude, I like that. I'm going through and looking at his numbers here. I mean, as you talked about, 52%, 115 three-point attempts, you know, in that season at Vanderbilt, 23 points a game, definitely got some potential there as a 6'6 wing with 6'10 wingspan, 213, a little bit older. So he's definitely not going to be a guy you have to wait for 2 or 3 years to develop. He can just kind of jump right in and serve a role that really fits that team. So we're looking at NBA comps. You know, we got a Danny Green comp here. We have a taller Buddy Hield comp, which definitely fits. You know, if we're talking about a guy that can just light it up from downtown and, you know, as soon as you walk into the arena, you have to respect this guy's range. So, you know, definitely comfortable beyond the 3-point arc, making things happen. And then also, I mean, he's not a bad defender. So you're looking at what Boston's going to get from him on the other side of the floor. They're really a team that prides himself on defensive effort. So he's going to come into an environment where you already have Jaylen Brown, you already have Marcus Smart and Jason Tatum. Being able to kind of bring him into that environment of just culture of digging down, getting in your stance and really ding guys up. So, I mean, you talk about everything he offers, you know, and being and already being 21, that's definitely a boon for this team. And I can see why, you know, you could pick him as an underrated guy because I haven't really heard much about him. You know, you hear about the, you know, Okarus, you hear about, you know, Edwards and these guys, but
for
you
sure.
know, Aaron Naismith, I mean, even for me, I wasn't talking about him much coming into the draft and I didn't really know him that well. So even his steal numbers indicate that he's going to be a pretty good defender at 1.4 steals per game.
For sure.
So that's a really good pick here, man. And I'm just looking at what happened here recently. We talked about it before the pod, but Gordon Hayward might be moving on. He just declined his $34 million player option.
That's crazy, man.
This is off topic a little bit here, man, but can you think of an example ever of a guy having that much guaranteed money who is not a LeBron, not an AD, you know, not a KD that opted out of that money? It just seems unfathomable to me.
Yeah, I can't think of an example off the top of my head. I mean, $34 million to play on a contender in the East with his college coach, Brad Stevens. I think there's something else going on. I don't know what it is, but man, that's pretty unprecedented. You know, I think the Hawks have been linked to him, the Knicks have been linked to him a little bit, you know, based on what I saw on Twitter earlier. But man, that's a strange one. So for him to walk and for the Celtics to lose that asset, I'm sure they're even happier that they took Nesmith here in the first round.
I'm sure. And maybe they had an inclination that he would opt out. Because, I mean, of course, last night he hadn't made a decision yet. And he waited until the very last second, according to Twitter, because people were counting down the minutes. It's like 10 minutes left, 5 minutes, 2 minutes. And then right before 5 o'clock Eastern, the deadline, you know, he made his decision. So I'm sure they were in the draft room, draft HQ last night. And they're saying to themselves, like, there's an opportunity. I mean, there's a chance. Like, if you get to the day before the deadline and you have a $34 million option you haven't decided yet,
yeah,
there's a pretty good chance you're going to opt out, you know, because any other person would say, like, as soon as it's available, I'm scooping it up, because that's some serious money right there. So
for sure, for sure. That's crazy. And, you know, it makes me think that he's got something lined up somewhere else, because if you're Gordon Hayward, you don't turn down $34 million to, you know, to wait out into the unknown of free agency. I mean, I think he's got a deal somewhere. So I guess we'll find out pretty soon where it is. But
we sure will. We sure will. Just something different here, man. It's just like nothing is given in this year, 2020, man. And, you know, he extends all the way to free agency. Like, we're going to see some stuff we've never seen before. So this is just a taste of things to come. So my underrated pickup here is going to be Denny Avdija. Correct me if I'm wrong in that pronunciation.
I think you got it.
Clearly not my area of expertise here. But, you know, I put in my notes here. He's not the sexiest name. Because he's coming from an international, you know, standpoint here, you know, somebody that played overseas, you know, doesn't have the kind of, you know, high profile of a, you know, LaMelo Ball. I mean, he played overseas, but we knew about him before that. You know, didn't come up in a big Division I college program that we saw play in, you know, countless big matchups, didn't have that kind of background. But you look at what Denny can offer a Washington, you know, it is a little bit confusing at first because you think about who they already have at that spot. They have Hachimura, just finished his rookie year. So, you know, it kind of seems a little redundant at first, but you have to remember that this is a guy that's a great playmaker. I mean, Avdija is going to offer an element of, you know, playmaking, setting guys up. He can also kind of be a point forward. I mean,
for sure,
he's not going to be somebody that's going to break people down off the dribble. You know, he's got great size, but from what I can see, what I've heard, he's not going to have great quickness or athleticism or anything like that. So he's got a feel for the game. He's got some basketball IQ to go along with that size, which is never a bad thing. You know, you pair those two things together in the basketball court, great things are going to happen. So you're going to see a lot of great pump fakes from this guy. You're going to see a lot of up and unders. You're going to see just solid fundamentals all around. So, I mean, that's, you know, you can't really say that's a bad thing for a Washington team that just needs some production in the worst way right now. And then you think about what he's going to offer you as far as shooting. Percentages aren't great. I mean, he only shot 52% from the free throw line on 75 attempts, which is pretty awful. But, I mean, his three-point percentage wasn't terrible. I mean, he's about average 33 to 34% from there. So the shot is definitely something that might take a little time, but I can see it coming along a little bit later. And not a bad finisher as well. So definitely a multifaceted player at the wing. And I'm not mad at it if I'm Washington. You know, it might take some work to kind of get him to fit in that lineup, but not bad at all, especially if they lose Bertans of free agency somehow. So could be a nice backup plan for him.
Absolutely. I really like that pick. You know, he's got a lot of size and skill. Denny's a guy that I think was mocked a lot of places to Cleveland at 5. So
him
falling down to Washington, you know, may even be a great value. But, yeah, I like his game a lot. And, you know, like you said, they need playmakers. They got Bradley Beal, who, you know, can't do it all by himself. They may be getting John Wall back. They may be flipping him for Russell Westbrook. Like, we're going to find out what that backcourt looks like. But I think Denny's going to have a lot of opportunity to thrive there in Washington, you know, even early on.
Me too. Me too. I feel for Washington, they've kind of gone through so many phases of wings there. It's like, you know, they had Otto Porter Jr. at one point, you know, moved on. They had Kelly Oubre. Moved up with him. You're bringing Hachimura, you know, you bring in Avdija. I mean, they're just kind of like cycling through these wing / forward players. And, you know, hopefully this guy they can hang on to for a little bit longer and he could be a long-term piece for them. but they're going in a different direction. You know, they're going away from that mold, a guy that they had before. You look at Kelly Oubre. I mean, he's a guy that's just going to be just electric, just going to throw down on people. A lot of posters, great energy, just all the time, never stops. Avdija's just going to approach it from a little bit different perspective, a little more methodical, a little bit more skill based. So I like that. You know, if something doesn't work out for you, I mean, there's nothing wrong with going in a different direction and seeing how that kind of turns your fortunes around. So
for sure. I really like that pick. You know, I think they tried to hit kind of a single with Rui last year. And I think with Denny, they're swinging a little bit harder. So I think that's sure. A little bit higher upside guy that could really pan out for him. So I think that's a really good pick.
Absolutely. Good stuff from Washington. Let's see how they can, you know, manage their assets and if they can kind of make a case to Bradley Beal, because, you know, he's got an extension, but you still got to make him happy, because, you know, those 2 years will go by real quick and he's going to be right back at it. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
So if we look at head scratchers in the lottery, who was selected that we just quite can't quite understand why that came to be, why it transpired? You know, I'm going to go right off the bat and say at number 10, Jalen Smith to Phoenix. I see it on your head, so I'm sure.
That's my pick. That's my pick, man. Jalen Smith.
I think that's a lot of our picks here. You look at the experts and, you know, from ESPN to The Ringer and in The Athletic, I'm sure a lot of people have the same thought here. You know, you ask yourself, why would you take a skilled center, a very good center, which I was kind of selfishly hoping fell to the Heat at 20 before sure. The draft. But, I mean, you have Ayton already there. Some people were saying he can play the four. You know, that's all well and good, but, like, can he really do that? I've heard some people say he's not quite fluid enough to play the four on offense and maybe not even on defense.
That's right.
So you look at it from that perspective. You have Ayton there, you know, at the four. He can't really sustain himself at that position for a long period of time. Why would you make that pick at 10? Because at 10, I mean, I'm sure you're looking for a starter, a long-term starter
sure.
at least. So that's just kind of confusing to me. You know, you look at what he brings to the table. I mean, nobody's going to doubt that he's a great player. He could be a great player.
For sure.
So based on what he did in college, I mean, he's very coordinated. You know, he's got a lot of skill. 6'10", 7'1", wingspan, shot blocker. Brings some rebounding to the table. A little bit of shot making. 36% last season from three. So, I mean, he has a shot. He can definitely space the floor.
For sure.
But, you know, you think of what he's going to bring to the table. It really comes down to defense. Like, he's going to block some shots, sure. But one of the minuses here, one of the question marks, he's not quite great when it comes to lateral quickness. You know, that hurts him. So yeah. I think he needs to be planted in the paint. And, of course, their guy, DeAndre Ayton, occupies the space already. So don't quite understand it.
Yeah, I don't either.
Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time-consuming, and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it.
And for me, it's not even as much Jalen Smith, the player. It's really the fit. I think you raised some valid points with his lack of lateral quickness. I think that he does several things really well. You know, he plays with a high motor. He really rebounds. Like you said, he can shoot it a little bit from three, more so than you might expect from a big. But, man, you've got DeAndre Ayton already playing at the five there. If you're looking for him to just be kind of a high-level backup center, I think you can find those guys in free agency for a good value. And, you know, you mentioned him falling to 20. I kind of expected him to go around 20, you know, around where the Heat were picking. At 10, you know, you passed up on Tyrese Halliburton, who went to Sacramento. You passed on Devin Vassell, who went to San Antonio. I mean, guys that can really contribute and really play and would fit well with Devin Booker, with Chris Paul, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson. I mean, I really like what Phoenix is doing, but I really, for their sake, would have hoped that they would have gone for a different pick than Jalen Smith. So like the player, don't like the fit. That's my head scratcher.
Yeah, same here, man. And I guess we do have to give Phoenix a little bit of the benefit of a doubt, because if we rewind a little bit here, we go back to last year, Cam Johnson's pick, who I believe was at 14. A lot of us were saying that was a reach, and you know,
sure,
the fit was good, but we just didn't feel like he warranted a selection that high, because you know, he'd been in college for, you know, a few years already, and he was older and the upside wasn't there. So we doubted them, but it worked out. So I'm not going to say it's just completely just like, oh, it's done. Yeah, they completely messed up.
Sure.
Just a question mark, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it deserves a question. And so we'll see how it turns out. But, you know, for me, if you're looking at a guy that, you know, projects to be a Thomas Bryant type of player, I'm not sure that's what you're looking for at 10. So that's my head scratcher.
Yeah. So we're in agreement on that one. Can't quite understand it. But let's get back to some great talent here, man, because that was just the lottery. But the rest of the first round had some great names that you mentioned. Devin Vassell, of course. You know, a lot of these guys, Haliburton went and had a great they went to some great franchises as far as like their fit and guys they need. Really encouraging to see that. So if we're going to best talent in the rest of the first round, this is a guy that you mentioned to me before the draft. You talked about it first. We need to watch this guy as he comes in. You know, you made some great points about this guy. So I'm going to mention him, and I'm going to hand the baton over to you, because I'm sure you have a lot to say about this talent here. But
Sidney
Bay, you know, 21-year-old, do-it-all player, shades of Tobias Harris. He's got some shot-making abilities. He's got great size at 6'8". He's going to come in and already be able to fill a variety of roles. So he's getting traded to Detroit. And as we know, Detroit is starting over, basically. They need everything right now. They need shot making. They need defense. I mean, they shipped off, you know, Luke Kennard, who is actually still on a rookie contract. So, I mean, when I say start over, they're starting over. Like, it doesn't matter if you're 20 years old, 21, you've played 3 years in the league, they're still looking to go in a different direction. So, Sadiq Bey, man, he's got some great intangibles. You know, he shot a pretty good percentage last year, effective field goal percentage of 58%. So he offers a lot on the court, man. I mean, great size, pretty mature player already. You know, he played 2 years at Villanova. He's got some playmaking skills, pretty versatile. He can, you know, make things happen from pretty much any area of the floor. The only knock against him is he's not this explosive athlete. He's not going to wow you with all these crazy dunks. He's not going to blow by people. But if we look at everything else, even his defense is pretty solid. You know, off ball, on ball, he's going to give you, you know, some great looks at basically wherever you kind of plug him in on the court, he's going to make things happen for you. So specifically for Detroit, I really like this pick, because they're saying to themselves, well, we're starting from scratch. So
for sure,
going for like dedicated specialist, like there's some teams, like you think of a guy we're going to talk about a little bit later, Tyrell Terry to
Dallas. Yep.
To Dallas there. And it's like, they can afford to pick up a specialist because that's all they really need. You got Luka, you got Porzingis. Just throw in a little piece there that can kind of be amplified by the strengths of your stars. But for Detroit, they don't have that yet. They're still searching for that. So they're just looking to lay the groundwork. And bringing in an older player that's got a lot of skills, very refined all-around game, that's a great way to kind of make things happen and kind of jumpstart your franchise, basically coming from the ashes here, because – you don't really have anything to build upon right now. So your thoughts on him, man, because you were talking about him a lot more than I was leading up to the draft year.
Absolutely. I love Sadiq Bey. You know, one of my favorite young players in the NBA right now is Mikal Bridges for the Phoenix Suns. And to me, Sadiq Bey is just almost a carbon copy of Mikal Bridges. You know, a long wing that can shoot the three. He's got wingspan for days. He can defend multiple positions. You know, he can guard bigger wings. He can take on smaller, quicker guards if you need him to. He's a great shooter from three. And you know, these Villanova guys come into the league and they're ready to go. You know, they're instant contributors. And I guess that's a credit to Jay Wright and the program he's got there. But I think Sadiq Bey is going to come in and immediately contribute for Detroit. I really like the pick, and I like the contrast, actually. You know, they went with Sadiq Bey, who I think they really know what they're getting there at that 19th pick, and kind of contrast that with Killian Hayes, who they took at 7, who's a little bit bigger swing, you know, a younger point guard who's played internationally that I know a lot of guys, specifically Kevin O'Connor, had him near the top of his draft board over at the Ringer. So I really like what Troy Weaver did, you know, in his first draft with Detroit. Sadiq Bey is a great pickup, and I have no doubt that he's going to be a starter in this league for 10 to 15 years. You know, he knows exactly who he is. So that's a great call.
Absolutely. It's kind of like an inverse of what we've seen from those top three picks. Those are players that don't quite know who they are yet. They're still trying to figure out what they're going to do best on a basketball court, where they're going to fit in, things like that. It really applies to all of us, right? In any walk of life, it's like when we're younger, it's like we're trying to find our place. But as you get older, you know, you go through some experiences and you kind of say to yourself, okay, this is what I bring to the table. This is where I fit best. And for Sadiq, that's the other end of the spectrum. I mean, unfortunately for these guys, you know, the draft is all about potential. So even if you know who you are, if it doesn't result in being a top, you know, 20, 30 player, it drops you a few spots. But I mean, if you go to a place where you're really going to develop and you're really gonna get the opportunity, that's a great thing. Because a lot of these teams, you know, you go to a franchise like, I don't know, maybe like a Sacramento, and I don't want to use Haliburton as an example. Maybe sure. Somebody else they picked, maybe like a big man, but you're just not sure if you're going to get your opportunity or you're going to be utilized in the right way based off of their history. But for Detroit, starting from scratch. So they're probably going to throw him in day one as a starter, along with Sekou Doumbouya, that they picked last year. Let those guys go to town and say, hey, what you got for us? What are you going to offer? So I like
absolutely.
He's going to get a lot of reps. So for a guy like that, that's definitely exciting, even if you're not getting picked in the top 10 or the top five or whatnot.
For sure.
So is that the same guy you had for your best talent, or are you looking at somebody a little bit different for this one?
I wrote about Sadiq Bey, but I actually went a little bit different direction. I picked Tyrese Maxey at 21
okay.
to the Philadelphia 76ers. Tyrese Maxey, a guard out of Kentucky, he got drafted alongside his backcourt teammate at Kentucky, Emmanuel Quickley. And for me, I think Maxey's tremendous. I think it's a shrewd pickup from Daryl Morey, a 6'3 point guard with a 6'6 wingspan. Really fierce competitor. If you watched Kentucky at all last year, really brought his A game in their biggest matchups. He's tricky playing in the pick and roll. He's still coming along as a shooter, but you can see the mechanics are strong and they're there. And as a playmaker, he's got incredible potential. He's a really good passer. Like I said, he plays well in the pick and roll. Defensively, he's just an absolute dog. I mean, he's a great on-ball defender, very smart, high basketball IQ, and he's a winner. So I think Maxey's a tremendous pickup. I actually really like everything that the Sixers did yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think they made a couple of very interesting moves to bring in Danny Green, to bring Seth Curry, to add some shooting to that team. I mean, you knew Daryl Morey was going to look to add some shooting as soon as he could. But for me, Tyrese Maxey is a tremendous value at 21. And I think he's going to be just an instant contributor for that Sixers team. Doc Rivers is going to love him.
Oh, for sure. If we're talking about a guy that's going to be gritty and just give his all at any given point in the game, that's somebody that's going to get you some minutes with Doc Rivers and instantly make you a favorite on that bench, and you're going to get some PT. So great pickup for them. I've heard a lot about Maxey in the last 24 hours here because I wasn't somebody that had done a lot of research on him specifically. But going through the draft and guys talking about underrated picks and talking about best fits and things like that, they kept going back to Tyrese. And you talk about what he offers as far as being competitive. You know, you got to think of like a Kyle Lowry. Like, Kyle Lowry is not a superstar. Like, Kyle Lowry is not all the first team. But he's a winner. Like, he's going to do whatever it takes to win a game at any given point. Just be a great teammate, be a great competitor. And great thing about Maxey is like you're getting this potential to be a great shooter. I mean, he shot 83% from the free throw line. Great indicator of future shooting ability in the NBA. So you're getting that off the bat. But also that defense, like on and off ball defense, very competitive. You got to dig into a stance and really get after it. And that's the culture that the Sixers have really built for themselves for the past couple of years. I mean, you look at who
for they sure.
Have brought onto their staff. I mean, you're looking at Ben Simmons and Embiid. Pretty much average or above average defenders at all five positions. So obviously they value defense quite a bit. So I think that's what factored into their decision to take Maxey at that spot. And he'd actually been mocked a little bit higher by a lot of outlets. So you're thinking about his value relative to his draft slot. That's pretty good. Pretty good.
For sure.
So I love everything that Daryl Morey and that staff did last night. They're killing it right now. And it just goes to show you, man, like one of the biggest competitive advantages in the league, Daniel LaRue from Real GM in the Athletics says this all the time. If you got great ownership, you're going places. You're going to get the right players in to make a difference. So fantastic pickup.
For sure. For sure.
I like that, man. So we're talking about underrated now. So for this slot, like who got picked up, you know, later in the first round, that's really going to make a difference off the bat. A guy I thought about and I really kind of decided on based on the team need was Cole Anthony to the Orlando Magic. So you think about the Orlando Magic and what they've done or what they haven't done the past few years. They don't really have anybody that can just go out and just be like, okay, get us a bucket, end a game, go make something happen. Evan Fournier, kind of, yeah, here and there. But, sure. I mean, especially from the guard spot. Like, DJ Augustine, all respect in the world to him. Great backup point guard. He's been really solid for them for 2 or 3 years now. Like, he does some great things for them. Fultz, I still have some hope in him that he's going to be a great player. But he's not a straight-up bucket getter. He's kind of like a dual, you know, playmaking slash, like, slashing point guard. Not a great shot maker from distance in any kind of way. So going to Cole Anthony, it's like, okay, they need a bucket in the worst way. Offense has been nothing to write home about for the longest time. So they got who they needed. You got a guy that can create a shot for himself, create a shot for other players. Probably not going to be the biggest difference maker long term. But even if he doesn't end up being a long term starter for you, I mean, geez, like the guy's going to go out there and make things happen. So 18.5 points a game. During his one season in North Carolina, 4 assists per game. You know, he looks to be a pretty decent facilitator, maybe not the best. He's going to give his effort on defense, may not be the best defender, but he's going to make an effort every single game. And I mean, he's going to drop some buckets from the outside. So
for sure,
sneaky athleticism, you know, can be pretty dangerous in transition and make things happen for you off on the break. So an explosive kind of player, kind of like harnessed energy, off the bench or in a starting role for the Magic. So that was why he was underrated for me. I think his stock kind of went down as it got lower or as we got closer to the draft, even though he's a little bit higher later on. So that's why Cole Anthony had my pick at that spot, man. What you thinking?
Yeah, for sure. I really like the Cole Anthony pick. You know, he's a guy that came into college in North Carolina as one of the real elite 5-star prospects in the country. Had a tough year, you know, with injury, and that North Carolina team really underperformed. And I think Cole Anthony took a lot of the heat for that team really underperforming. And yeah, I think it probably hurt his draft stock a little bit. But yeah, I like the opportunity for him in Orlando. I think he's going to get a lot of shots in. I think they're missing Isaac this year with that knee injury. So they're a little shorthanded, but a perfect opportunity for him to fill in as a rookie and come in and get some valuable experience. Like you said, playing with DJ Augustine. I think Anthony's going to be a nice pickup for them and a really good value, you know, further back in the first round than a lot of people probably mocked him originally.
True that. Anybody different for you? Underrated? Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to go with the guy who was the worst kept secret of the first round, was how much Oklahoma City coveted this guy. And I guarantee you that nobody has seen much of this guy outside of YouTube highlights and, you know, reading scouting reports from Jonathan Givony and Kevin O'Connor. I'm going to try not to butcher this.
Oh, boy.
Alexei Pokachevsky. The 7-foot Serbian. He's the youngest player in this draft, and he is a total home run swing for Sam Presti and the Thunder. And I think that's their goal. You know, I think next year they're going to try to tank and get towards the top of that loaded 2021 NBA draft. But for the 17th pick, you know, they're swinging for the fences with Pokuševski. And he's got a skill set that's really fascinating to me. He's a 7-footer that plays on the perimeter. He is skinny as a rail right now, so they need to get him in and get some weight on him for sure if he's going to be able to play in this league. But a really high upside guy at 17, can really pass the ball, initiate the offense. He can shoot it from outside. I think he's got a very unique skill set, and a lot of draft analysts that I really trust are super high on him. And they believe in the long term that he's going to be, he could be a tremendous player, and someone that is really slept on for that 17th pick in this draft. So he's definitely a swing. I don't know if he's he's a low floor, high ceiling kind of guy. But for me, I like the roll of the dice. And so I'm going to go with Pokuševski in Oklahoma City.
So you said high ceiling, low floor, Dragan Bender.
Dragan Bender, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
I mean, like.
Absolutely. You know, or Porzingis, or, you know, one of those kind of guys that is just a unicorn. So we'll see. You know, the level of competition that he played against in Greece is questionable. So I think that we really don't know what he is yet. But the good news for him is that he's going to get a great opportunity on a rebuilding OKC team. He's going to get a lot of minutes, and you know, they're going to see what he's got. So I'm willing to see. I think it's going to be a very fascinating pick to watch develop. He's a really interesting prospect in this draft.
I'm really interested in him too, man. And I didn't know anything about him going into this draft, I'll be honest. But, you know, I'm looking at his measurements and what people have been talking about him, kind of like what he brings to the table. And it's like, yeah, 7-footer with shooting touch. I mean, like, this is Porzingis 2.0, because Porzingis, we talked about in the same way, very tall, lanky, great touch, super skinny, not going to be able to hold up in a physical game, down low, make anything happen basically inside the three-point line or inside the mid-range area. So, I mean, like, yeah, why not the defenses for OKC? It's not like they're going to have a shortage of picks anyway in the next few drafts. So, I mean, if you strike out on this one, it's like there's another, like, 20 where that came from. So
For sure. And that's what they're doing right now. They're just trying to collect assets and swing for the fences. And, you know, I think it's a worthwhile strategy for now. I'm sure next year, you know, if they're drafting at the top of the board in 2021, it's not going to be quite as big of a risk. I'm sure they're going to be looking for, you know, a cornerstone piece to go with SGA.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't put it past them. I mean, Sam Presti and those guys, like, excellent scouting department, player development department. So, I mean, like, all the confidence in the world, they're going to make things happen this year and kind of going forward with all those picks. So, Sam, man, like, we got really in depth in these discussions, and like, the time just completely just like went by me. What we're going to do here is kind of talk about these trades real quick in the last segment here to kind of wrap it up. Sorry about the second round guys. Shout out to them for, you know, making a mark and still getting drafted. Just don't have the time I want to talk about those guys.
For sure. We'll have to write something about those second rounders since we had to cut them out today.
That's a great idea. So, guys, be sure to stay tuned for that. It's coming soon, just not tonight.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's talk about, since we're always talking about the Thunder, let's get into that trade here a little bit more. Danny Green going to the Sixers. They're getting a great player in Al Horford back in that trade. So, I mean, like, he's got a lot of years left on his deal still. I think 3 years left, tons of money guaranteed, which is fine for them. If you're a franchise that's rebuilding and you're looking to gain assets, that's what you do. You assimilate some of those lower value contracts. Because he's still a great player. He's just overpaid right now. And, you know, you get a pick back in return. So, I mean, two picks actually. So, I mean, it works out nicely for them. And then Danny Green going to the Sixers, more spacing, still sticks to that defensive identity, that culture that I talked about earlier. So it works out, I think, for both sides. They're both getting something they want, something they need, and it's going to influence them in different ways. So Horford's just going to be that, you know, solid contributor, veteran presence in the locker room. Going to help them win a few games here and there, although not too many, since they are going to be going a little bit downhill next season.
For sure.
And Danny Green, he's on another winning team, and he's got all the intangibles. He knows how to win. He just won a championship, and that's where the Sixers are trying to go. So for both sides, I really like the trade, and they're going to definitely make their mark just in different ways for those franchises. So I'm a fan.
Absolutely. That's actually two championships on the bounce for Danny Green, you know, with Toronto and with the Lakers last year. But yeah, I think that's a great pickup for Daryl Morey. It's a win-win trade for both teams. The Thunder, you know, I think you're going to see that strategy from them going forward where they take on bad contracts to add assets at the same time, kind of utilizing that cap space that they have. So from them, I think that's a a really interesting trade from their perspective. They took that 34th pick and took a guy I really liked, Théo Maledon, a guard out of France, who's going to be a very interesting project for them. And from the Sixers' perspective, they added shooting. You know, they picked up Seth Curry yesterday in a separate trade. Mm-hmm. Danny Green, a great 3-and-D guy with a lot of championship experience. So I think it's one of those few win-win trades that you see in the NBA.
No doubt. I mean, the Sixers need a shooting in the worst way. And while we're on the subject of shooting, we have this second trade, Seth Curry to the Sixers for Josh Richardson. So you look at Seth Curry, and I think I read earlier that he's a 44% three-point shooter over the last 3 years.
That's crazy.
This is a guy that is absolutely going to light up the Nets. You know, he's going to pull up. He's not going to be as dynamic as Steph Curry. But, I mean, as far as just pure efficiency, like, he's going to bring all of that to the table. He could do a little bit off the dribble, not too much, but, you know, he can drive off of a closeout and get a floater in there or two per game. So not terrible. And then Josh Richardson getting shipped out. A really important thing to remember about Josh Richardson is even though he's only getting paid $11 million this season, for next season he has a player option, which he's probably going to opt out of, puts him in the free agency market for 21. The market might be a little more competitive since more teams will have cap space. And that's not something the Sixers want to be dealing with when it comes to like adding more money onto their books and having to re-up this guy for whatever he's going to get in free agency, which I'm sure is going to be a nice deal. So you're getting Seth Curry for 3 years, $8 million per, and you're getting that shooting you so desperately need in a chase for a championship. So great on their end. And then the Mavericks get their defensive guy next to Luka. Defense was their Achilles heel all season. They get that and actually get a decent three-point shooter as well. So for both sides, I really like it. And it just really makes sense. I mean, they're both trying to win. They just needed different things. Offense on this side, defense on this side.
Absolutely. Seth Curry is just a player right in the mold of Daryl Morey. You know, he's a fantastic shooter. Like you mentioned, 44% from three the last couple of years. He is going to be very, you know, a piece that they really could have used the last couple of years, and they finally get him. So I'm sure there's more moves to come for Philly, you know, with Daryl Morey. He's never going to sit still, but I think Seth Curry is an awesome pickup on a great contract for them. From the Mavs perspective, that's a really good point you made with Josh Richardson. You know, he's probably going to be an expiring contract next summer. He brings a lot of defense for the here and now, you know, as kind of a long defensive-minded wing. But I'm sure Dallas is looking to keep as much cap space open as possible next summer. A couple of big fish that might be available that may want to play with Luka. So I think it's a heady move.
Absolutely, man. Both these front offices are making great moves, and they're just in different phases right now. The Thunder out there doing their thing, getting ready for the future, and you know, the Sixers and Mavs, they see what they have right now. They have stars in their midst, and they're ready to pounce on the rest of the league and make a move and start winning. So great stuff all around. And this is just the beginning, guys. You know, the trades are ramping up, and then free agency starts Friday at 6 p.m. So depending on when you're listening to this or watching it, you know, you might be in the midst of just being bombarded by signings and whatnot. So everybody just keep an eye on Twitter. Be sure your notifications are turned on for Woj and Shams on there, and so you don't miss a beat, and stay in the loop with everything. But Sam, I want to thank you again, friend man, for joining me on this podcast. This discussion was great, obviously, because I completely lost track of time and just saw that we're just kind of flying out there. But
for sure, man.
Stuff, man. So thanks again, and it was great to just link up again and get down with this NBA talk, man.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you having me on, and excited to start contributing to the blog as well. So
yeah, man.
Appreciate it, man.
Yes, sir. We're glad to have you. So Sam, let the people know where they can find you on Twitter if they want to get linked up with you and then see what you're going to start producing for Business Casual Basketball here in the next few weeks.
Absolutely. So the Twitter handle is @RealSamAldridge, just like my name shows on the screen. So yeah, follow me. I am tweeting about NBA all the time. So yeah, go ahead and give me a follow if you're interested in that. So yeah, man.
Good stuff. And then for Business Casual Basketball, be sure to follow us, BC Basketball 2, Twitter and Instagram. Be sure to follow those sources if you want to see what Sam's producing. I'm going to have some articles coming soon, free agency list, more tweets, and then more upcoming news on Business Casual Basketball. So follow us there. Don't miss a beat, and be sure to tune in because the NBA insanity is just going to ramp up from here going into the beginning of the season, just a few weeks away now. So for everybody, thanks again for joining us, and enjoy this NBA content as we get closer to the start of the season. And then, of course, we'll be back next week with some more in-depth NBA analysis, hot takes, and the like. So enjoy the rest of your evening, guys, and then we'll see you back here on the pod real soon.